Do you support marriage equality?
It's irrelevant because it was already settled. It's law. It was settled in the Supreme Court. I mean, it's done.
If you become president, you might try to appoint justices to overrule the decision on same-sex marriage?
I would strongly consider that, yes.
Sunavi Bridham is the former managing editor of The Advocate, which has been a leading LGBTQ news magazine for many, many years. So she has an unusually broad perspective on the ebb and flow of rights and challenges for the nation's gay community. Seeing her writing appearing in Religion Dispatches magazine around the Trump presidential campaign and victory suggests the depth of her concern, and it prompted us to invite Sunavi to be with us on this show, and thankfully she agreed. So I'm happy to welcome Sunavi Bridham to State of Belief Radio. Sunavi, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, there is a widespread perception that in this country, there is a vast divide between faith communities and progressive, particularly LGBTQ persons. From my work, I know that's far from true, but the assumption persists. Could I ask you to start with just your thoughts on that division, which I think is largely the fault of far-right conservatives, all too often successfully claiming religion as their own exclusive purview?
I absolutely agree with that assessment. There is a small faction of the religious right wing that has made opposing any modicum of LGBT equality their bread and butter. In my personal experience and my experience reporting for The Advocate, for Religion Dispatches, for Vox and other places, is that actually most people who identify as people of faith at worst have a kind of live and let live attitude about LGBT people. The vitriol that we see coming from groups like Alliance Defending Freedom, National Organization for Marriage, Liberty Council, seems to be pretty limited to the right wing. My concern is that far right wing, and they sometimes call themselves the alt-right, which I think is better described as neo-Nazis, they really have obviously the president-elect's ear. And that's what concerns me, is that they've obviously felt emboldened by Donald Trump's election. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned that we're going to see them continue to use particularly religious freedom arguments as a sword or as a tool in what they've stated that they want to do, which is erase Obama's presidency.
Sunavi, in your work at The Advocate and also in Colorado, did you find that most LGBTQ people intuitively expected hostility from faith communities, or are the scars as common as I would assume them to be, or is it often more a case of just indifference?
I think as far as how LGBT folks feel, and certainly that's a broad spectrum, and it's hard to speak generally about the entire community, and sometimes I wonder how much of a community we are. But I think generally, certainly most folks are tentative about religion, about organized faith communities, because a lot of us do have scars from personal interactions with faith communities. I know that's particularly true for a lot of the transgender folks. There are some faiths that, you know, say, okay, it's okay to maybe be gay if you don't act on it, but you know, your gender identity, something ordained by God, and trying to change that is sacrilege. And that's really hard for trans folks particularly to hear, and it can lead to a lot of family rejection, which is a really substantial in particularly the suicide risk of LGBT and particularly transgender people. So I think a lot of the rejection that we see of LGBT people from families, from communities, is faith-based, but I do want to be clear that in my experience, that is by no means all groups reject LGBT people.
Coincidentally, my next guest this week is Jay Michelson, whose powerful book, God Versus Gay, encapsulates that very argument very effectively. But let's look at what you've been saying in your Religion Dispatches articles, particularly the most recent, which is headlined, Why We Can't Afford to Wait and See How Trump Dismantles LGBT Rights. Talk about that urgency, please.
As a queer woman and a journalist, I'm a cisgender person. That means I'm not transgender. I'm white. So I do have a fair amount of security and privilege. Even so, I felt directly targeted by Donald Trump's campaign rhetoric, and particularly more so by the people appointing to his cabinet. Mm-hmm. I need to double-check the update since he's appointed a few more people, but thus far, nearly every single person on Donald Trump's suggested cabinet documented anti-LGBT PACs. Mm-hmm. And that's what actually concerns me more than, you know, I think, frankly, the president-elect doesn't care one way or another about LGBT folks. I think he's happy to take our money, you know, at his businesses. And, you know, he said Caitlyn Jenner could use the appropriate restroom in Trump Tower, and she did so. And, you know, I don't think that makes him an incredible ally. But I do think that, you know, his particular animus and his suspicions are not directed at us. Mm-hmm. However, prior to becoming the vice president-elect, Mike Pence was best known for championing the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana that essentially made it legal for businesses and individuals to deny service to people because of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or marital status. Those are the kind of folks who really concern me, and frankly, those are the people who have more experience legislating this kind of state-sanctioned discrimination. That's what really concerns me, and I think that the president-elect will not be a defender of those rights. I think he will kind of say, yeah, that's whatever you guys want. You know, it seems pretty clear thus far that he's not particularly interested in the day-to-day nuances of governance, which means he's going to leave that to the people in his cabinet. Which is where I think their universal anti-LGBT histories really are concerning.
You know, I take passivity over hostility anytime. And
yes, I agree.
I think you're right on that. But what do you see as the most immediate threats?
I think the most immediate threat is probably to certainly the Affordable Care Act. One of the perhaps slightly less reported on, we reported on it a lot at The Advocate and LGBT media, but the Affordable Care Act really broke ground in terms of mandating transgender inclusive health care in most states, and particularly as a provision of receiving ACA funds and whatnot. It required that doctors could not turn away, could not refuse to treat transgender individuals, that you know, standard health care for trans folks like hormone therapy, or for those who are interested in seeking it and for whom it's medically necessary, gender-affirming surgery, those were all covered. They had to be covered. They were included in the pre-existing condition coverage. All of these things were normally, those provisions had been very, very hard for transgender people to access. Mm-hmm. I think that since the incoming administration has made it very clear that they plan to dismantle Obamacare, I think that the trans protections will be among the first things to go, because frankly they impact a small portion of the population, and I think they can repeal those without a whole lot of outrage. We'll try and make as much noise as we can here in, you know, LGBT media, but I think, you know, most folks, those were quote-unquote controversial protections in the first place, so I think they will probably repeal those, which genuinely concerns me, particularly for, you know, the health of transgender folks. I have a personal stake. My husband is transgender. We get our health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. And it could very well be that, you know, by March or so, mm-hmm. he won't be able to obtain his prescription medication that he's been on for 5-6 years, and that helps him, you know, be who he is and remain stable and healthy. And for a lot of transgender folks particularly, they are 4 times more likely to live in poverty than cisgender Americans. And that, combined with a lack of access to health care, can have really deadly consequences. Particularly for trans folks who are then forced to turn to underground economies, which then further threaten their safety.
Mm-hmm. Senator V, I don't want to pass over your mention of Mike Pence. I am personally far more fearful of Mike Pence than I am of Donald Trump in relation to the issues that we're talking about. Tell me what you think about that. How about his influence? Do you think he will be a very influential factor, or do you think Trump will just kind of listen and then go on with whatever he wants to do?
I absolutely share your concern. There was an SNL sketch a couple weekends ago where Alec Baldwin's Trump said to I think Beck Bennett's Mike Pence that, "Oh, Mike, you're the reason I'll never be impeached." And I think that's kind of true. Mike Pence absolutely frightens me more. He has more experience in legislating. He has just a history that has demonstrated that he very, very strongly believes that LGBT folks should not be granted protection, should not be granted health care, particularly in Indiana. He cut funding for HIV programs, and subsequently there was such a severe outbreak of HIV, and I believe it was syphilis or gonorrhea, that the federal government had to step in Indiana. He's already demonstrated the kind of priority he gives to our health and our wellness, and that's what scares me. And I think because, you know, as we've seen with Trump being, it seems like, more interested in holding his thank you rallies and going to fancy dinners, mm-hmm. I think Mike Pence will be doing most of the legislating, and that's what scares me. Yeah. I think you look at some of the cabinet picks like Betsy DeVos, and I don't think there's any way that Trump knew who Betsy DeVos was. Mm-hmm. I think that Mike Pence is very aware of her work, particularly around privatizing education and favoring religious schools over public ones. And I think that's probably where that nomination came from, and many of the others, especially since Pence is heading up the transition team.
In the article that we've referenced already, you address those who have the luxury of waiting. And so much of the recent culture wars have been built around portraying LGBTQ Americans as demanding special rights and wanting to oppress conservative Christians. Why do you think that that rhetoric has succeeded in so many parts of the country?
It's a great question. I think the kind of dehumanization that we've seen that comes from that sort of rhetoric was a really key point of this presidential campaign, which was scary. It was something that I never thought I would see as an American journalist covering an election. But I think that it's also, you know, history has shown that that tactic is very effective. And I think there's been a lot made about quote-unquote working-class white voters who delivered Trump the White House and how they're perhaps not feeling the end of the recession as much as some of us are. My concern is that, you know, those conversations generally tend to exclude LGBT people who also tend to, you know, have higher unemployment rates, who tend to, you know, have more children and make less money. So there, I think that, you know, LGBT Americans, for all that the Obama administration has absolutely been our strongest ally that we've ever had in the White House, I still think that there's a lot of myth around thinking that all LGBTQ people are rich white gay men like Peter mm-hmm. Thiel, who is a Donald Trump supporter. Mm-hmm. That's just not true.
That's right. That
and
is.
I think because there are fewer of us than there are straight Americans, it's easier to paint with a broad brush. I had hoped we were making some progress in that those characterizations, particularly in the wake of the marriage equality ruling in 2015, seeing that, you know, most Americans support marriage equality, which is great, but ultimately, you know, if you have been fired from your job for being married to this person of the same sex, it doesn't really matter if you can get married. If you got married on Sunday and get fired on Monday, which, by the way, can happen in, I believe, 29 U.S. states.
Genevieve Bridham is the former managing editor of the influential LGBTQ news magazine, The Advocate. Her recent writing in Religion Dispatches magazine is both timely and important, and we'll link to her article entitled "Why We Can't Afford to Wait and See How Trump Dismantles LGBT Rights." We will have that at stateofbelief.com. Genevieve, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio, and hope we can talk again.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for the work you do.